Hello everyone, and welcome to our webinar today entitled An Enterprise-Wide Approach to Collateral Management. Today's webinar is sponsored by SunGard and hosted by DriftSource. Financial institutions today are increasingly centralizing collateral management on a firm-wide basis to improve collateral optimization, collateral trading, and to support more stringent credit counterparty risk mitigation practices. Many financial institutions still manage collateral in separate silos, but this fragmentation impedes a firm's ability to make the most efficient use or reuse of collateral inventory and to obviously effectively manage their credit counterparty risk on a firm-wide or enterprise-wide basis. Market changes, and especially the introduction of central clearing for some OTC derivatives, will further complicate collateral management operations in the near term. And this all reinforces the need for financial institutions of all types to gain a better handle on collateral activities across product lines. In today's webinar, we have a panel of experts who are going to be discussing the current market drivers, benefits, and challenges in creating an enterprise-wide collateral management operation. They're going to specifically be discussing some of the things on your screen as you see, the market drivers, regulatory compliance and how regulation will impact this strategy, collateral optimization and trading, credit counterparty risk, operational challenges and benefits, as well as organizational challenges that will arise from implementing an enterprise-wide collateral management strategy. We will be taking questions from the audience during this event, so if you do have any questions, we encourage you to put them in the Q&A section, which you see at the bottom right of your screen. You may send this at any time during the event, and we'll be addressing this in a special Q&A session towards the end of the event. So before I begin, I'd like to introduce you to our speakers. We have Ewan Crawford. He is the Global Head of Collateral Management and manages the EMEA Derivatives Core Operations Team at Nomura. Prior to assuming these two roles, Ewan has worked at RBS, Cargill, and has had responsibilities for asset servicing, FX and fund operational teams, which support the business flow traded by Nomura's EMEA head office. Next up, we have Ted Allen. He is the Vice President of Capital Markets Collateral at SunGard. Ted has been at the forefront of collateral management activities and thinking for over 15 years. He's worked at J.P. Morgan, First National Bank of Chicago as collateral managers and as also a consultant with CubeMatch, where he managed the system selection, development, and implementation of a cross-business margin platform for a top-tier bank. And Ted recently joined SunGard, or rejoined SunGard again, last year. Next, we have Nick Newport. Nick is a director of InterDelta, where he is responsible for InterDelta's collateral management practice. Most of his project consulting focuses on analysis of existing environments and the identification of system, process, and organizational change. He provides advice on the strengths, weaknesses of collateral management technology, and advises on functional and architectural design and future state operating models. Last but not least, we have Jason Orban. Jason is a managing director in J.P. Morgan's collateral management business, which is part of the worldwide security services arm. He is, as a global product head for derivatives and cash collateral management. Jason is responsible for servicing buy-side and sell-side clients in Europe, North America, Asia Pacific, and he also manages regulated cash deposit products. And again, for any latecomers, I'm Julia Schieffer, editor of DerivSource, and I'm going to be moderating the discussion today. Just a quick announcement for any members of press on the call. Please do not quote the speakers directly unless you first obtain permission from them and from us as the event organizers. So beginning the event by focusing on the market drivers, I'd like to pose the question generally to the panel: what are the post-financial crisis drivers behind current plans for financial institutions to centralize collateral management at this point in time? Nick, do you want to kind of take the lead on this?
Yeah. Okay. I think firstly, it's worth saying that there was already a significant trend towards centralization of collateral functions across the industry in the years leading up to the financial crisis. So centralization is not necessarily a new trend, but much of the pre-crisis centralization was primarily amongst the major investment banks, but there was also certainly already rapid trickle-down going to the wider industry. Just still thinking about this sort of pre-crisis process, I think centralization had generally taken two forms. Firstly, centralization across locations and entities, and secondly, centralization across product lines. This process was largely being driven by two things, really. On the one hand, client service demands in respect of providing clients with both the economic and the process benefits of things like cross-product netting, single margin calls, integrated client reporting. And on the other hand, operational efficiency in terms of things like process standardization, straight-through processing. And these, particularly these latter points, were often being sort of focused on with a desire to offshore or nearshore certain elements of collateral activities. So I think just to summarize that sort of pre-crisis sort of environment, there was certainly a distinct trend towards centralization in these years, and there was some very clear sort of client service and operational efficiency drivers for that. But then looking forward and to the sort of post-crisis environment, it's certainly true that there's been an added major impetus to the centralization process over the past 2 years, as all level of banks and also many other financial institutions have been heavily investing further in the process of centralization. But the business drivers of that process have kind of changed a little bit somewhat from the sort of pre-crisis drivers. So if we look at the post-crisis environment, the drivers have sort of been revised and refined to look more at things like increased control, enhanced risk management, integrated and timely collateral reporting, but to senior management internally rather than the sort of pre-crisis driver of client service reporting. But in addition to that, there's certainly an ongoing desire to improve operational efficiency through STP, which also generally adds to that control framework as well. It's probably worth noting at this point that whilst I sort of hinted there that as a driver of centralization, client service did move away slightly in the immediate aftermath of the financial crisis. I do see that as a driver coming back into play quite strongly, particularly when we start to look at things like central clearing offerings, whereby general clearing members are often heavily focused on providing creative sort of solutions around centralized collateral services to non-clearing members. So I think whilst there's very much now a sort of a much stronger focus on risk control and the strength of the process, some of those previous drivers around client service and things are coming back into the picture. So I guess at a sort of high-level summary view, that's how I would see the current sort of evolution of the state of the centralization drivers. Clearly, also many of the new regulations which impact collateral management are also adding a significant further impetus to this centralization process. But I think what we'll do is we'll come on to talk about some of those regulatory issues on the following questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nick. Just quickly to any of the other speakers, do any of you want to add any other drivers that you think are important for your specific institution or clients?
Well, I think it's Ewan here. I think certainly from our point of view, Nick touched certainly the main changes, and it's a very valid point that he makes around centralization predating the financial crisis, although to some extent it did clearly bring it into focus. From our perspective, it's really been around gaining a transparent view so that the collateral management team and subsequent reporting, client or internal, is kind of one-stop shop. All the detail that needs to be there is there. Process around fails and just a succinct and as real-time as possible view can be driven out with a view to producing a cost-efficient process and also, you know, keeping risk to a minimum in the process too.
Excellent. Anyone else want to add anything before we move on to the regulatory drivers?
Well, this is Ted Allen here. I guess another aspect of it is the opportunity to improve the, I guess, the overall risk management processes around collateral by taking a holistic view of the entire customer relationship. You're able to understand really what the true risks are at a portfolio level, the true exposures and the collateral against them, and then. Leading on from that, the ability to model stress conditions at the at that portfolio level to see, you know, what would be the impact of certain market conditions on your exposures globally and on the collateral assets that you have globally, and to be able to estimate what future collateral requirements may be. Another aspect of it, of course, is just extending the customer service side of the relationship, perhaps more vertically as well, by being able to offer additional services such as collateral transformation, which will become more of an issue as we move into a central clearing environment.
Great. Thank you. Let's move on to regulatory drivers. Now, obviously, regulation is still in flux in both Europe and the U.S., and the rules have yet to be formalized. But just kind of briefly talking about this, can we discuss how new regulation will likely influence how collateral is managed from an overview? And Nick, do you want to give us another brief from your perspective on this?
Yeah, certainly. Well, clearly, as you touch upon, there are many new regulations coming into play. Some of these are in varying states of development and implementation, but a lot of them, as we know, will have a significant impact on collateral management processes, organization, infrastructure, right across the industry. And to a large extent, these regulations will certainly, I think, be the core driver which will determine how collateral is used and managed in the sort of coming few years. These regulations are very wide in scope, as you touched upon, and we could easily spend our whole time here covering these. But so I'll just what I'll try and do is just focus on a couple of the key impacts emerging from a couple of the key regulatory frameworks coming out. So in thinking then about the key regulations which need particularly to be taken into account when assessing collateral infrastructure, I guess the primary ones which institutions are focusing on are Dodd-Frank and the corresponding European rules similar to Dodd-Frank, and then Basel III. So firstly, from a Dodd-Frank perspective, elements of particular importance which will drive change across the industry are, I'd say, two things I'd like probably worth highlighting. Firstly, as we've already touched upon a couple of times in this session already, the move to central clearing, which I'm sure everyone on the call is thinking about to some degree or another. And whilst this is now very much a concrete reality, the end state landscape is still very much evolving, and my expectation is that the industry here will be realigning within a mixed, cleared, and OTC model for many years to come as this fully evolves. So I think there's still a lot of thinking and shaping to be done around the whole central clearing piece, but I think everybody in this industry knows that's absolutely critical to the future landscape. Secondly, on the Dodd-Frank piece, I think the rules around things like segregation of client collateral assets, restrictions on rehypothecation, these aspects will have an impact not only on the way that collateral management will be organized in any given institution, but will potentially have a significant knock-on impact on the wider business, thinking here about things like derivatives pricing and cost of funding. So I think there's potentially wider impact from the collateral rules to the wider business coming out of some of that Dodd-Frank stuff as well. So then just briefly, after just a couple of points on the Dodd-Frank piece, then just to probably just a couple of similar sort of high-level points around Basel III. So I think if we think about the impact of Basel III on collateral management, I think at the highest level we can probably put these impacts or touch points into two camps. firstly, requirements around implementation of best practice operational collateral controls. So there's a lot in Basel III around really embedding the operational controls and ensuring that control framework that was already to a certain extent being rolled out across the industry, but that's now being formalized through Basel III from a regulatory perspective. So thinking there around things like daily collateral calls, reconciliations, timely and aggregate management reporting, which one thing that Ewan touched upon, but even things like appropriate staffing levels and skills in collateral departments are touched upon within that regulation as well. So I think that's quite important and key. Then secondly, over and above the operational controls piece, there's a whole host of changes as to how collateral should be modelled from a capital perspective, which will have significant impact, particularly on those banks calculating counterparty risk capital under the internal model method regime. So some of these as well will have a knock-on demands onto the operational process. So thinking here, things like the requirement to increase the margin period of risk for disputing counterparty, et cetera. So I think that's really, if you want to, at a very high level, categorize the Basel III rules into two sets of impact on collateral. That's where I'd put it into the tightening of operational procedures and the improvements to the modeling regime. So that's really where I think it's going to be the focus on and impact on collateral infrastructure from some of the regulation over the coming years.
Great. Thank you, Nick. Do the other speakers want to add anything on what they're concerned about in terms of regulatory drivers and potential impact on their collateral management operations and functions?
It's Ewan again. I think I'll add just some detail around the client clearing, which a lot of these is driven by the US and European regulation that the context of a market in flux or a non-standard market where they'll have elements of product requiring clearing, the timings and detail around that clearing being somewhat confused at the moment or unclear. So the market remains in a mixed position where we have a lot of bilateral transactions, a lot of client-cleared transactions potentially growing in the future. And some of the issues thrown up from that are around the variation in the collateral calculations that arise from a central counterparty, the way that they'll model risk, call for variation and initial margins, have multi-currency calls. That type of exposure management is very different in a lot of ways from a bilateral management situation. So there is a kind of, in a back-to-back position where one trade faces the CCP, another faces the market or a client, there is a definite delta in the way that the collateral is managed in those two circumstances, and the cost and implication of that difference needs to be fully understood in terms of when each side of the trade is priced. That's kind of probably one of the key areas for us to focus on, and is aside from understanding the whole process of offering a client clearing solution.
Okay, obviously clearing is a significant change that's going to be impacting collateral, as you mentioned, Ewan, in various different ways. Just again, to ask the panel, if you have any other comments, please jump in. Otherwise, I'm going to move on to collateral optimization. Okay, just a reminder, if you have any questions, I'm sure clearing, for instance, is a hot topic. Do please send questions through Q&A, and we'll aim to address those as we can.
Yeah, it's probably worth saying, Julia, one of the key questions we get asked on a regular basis is, it's getting slightly less now, but there's always the question, does the need for collateral management or complex collateral management processes go away with the clearing environment? And I reiterate what Ewan said, it's certainly for the foreseeable future, this mixed environment which we're going to have to exist in actually makes collateral management processes somewhat more complicated rather than more simple, certainly for the foreseeable future.
Right. And that brings up a question I always ask people. In terms of timing, generally for implementing either improving collateral management generally or specifically to create an enterprise-wide strategy. In terms of timing, are these regulations going to impede kind of more immediate progress in that area? Clearing, for instance, are people kind of waiting around before they start initiatives, or should they, for things to be formalized? It sounds like, Nick, you're saying no, but what did the panel think about that?
I mean, this is Jason. I can come in. I think people do need to. I think we realize, and at least what we're seeing for the clients I interact with on the buy side, everybody has come to the realization and understands now that the trades are, that the market is going to be, as the other panelists brought up, bifurcated in nature. And I think they have gotten their heads around the fact this will make things a lot more complicated. So we're starting to see people starting to think about reaching out to various partners to start the conversations now rather than later. I mean, what is going to be debated and what's going to come out in the current marketplace over the next, you know, couple months, hopefully, first in the U.S. and then in Europe and then at some point in Asia, is just where on the sliding scale it eventually lands. You know, how far will how far will the push go to central clearing? I mean, obviously all the regulators want to push it or have the bias to push it as far as possible. But even if any of the market remains bilateral, which our opinion is a significant amount of it still will, that's going to create a very complex operating environment. And many people are going to, and what we'll talk about a little bit later too, are going to need to make systems changes or partner with the appropriate people to help them navigate that new landscape. And starting earlier rather than later, start making sure you're having those conversations now, I think is very important, because as long as you establish the relationship, you can grow with your partners appropriately as the various regulations come to be are written and become more clear.
Excellent. Well, I just want to move on to collateral optimization. We're getting some questions about regulation, and we will address those towards the Q&A section. But just moving on collateral optimization, and again, maybe Jason, if you could kind of start us off with this. I'd like to ask you, what are the different methods in which firms are adopting to pinpoint the most optimal use of collateral inventory, and what are the trends in collateral optimization more generally?
Yeah. So what the first thing that clients are still focusing on, at least what we see, is that knowing that the collateral is there's going to be continued pressure in the new models on firms to utilize their collateral as optimally as possible, eligibility schedules are still very important. Firms are emphasizing very strict eligibility requirements to ensure that their collateral, in certain cases, if it can be reused, is reused. But also, that facilitates analyzing and pinpointing the inventory that they have. You know, being able to have the cut down on the more esoteric type of assets enables the kind of data mining that people want to be able to do. Secondly, what we are then seeing folks doing is that they're realizing that very much that this question now becomes an issue about improving the flow of data and making sure that they're able to see cross the, as we've talked about, the enterprise-wide solution and being able to see their collateral positions wherever they may be in the firm. And what firms have been doing, as we've seen it, is basically honing around three different conversations about solving that issue. They're trying to either decide if they want to build on their own, whether they want to license or buy some sort of off-the-shelf or vendor type of solution, or do they want to outsource to a specific custodian or collateral manager their processing. Each has its positives and negatives. You know, the building and the licensing are usually very expensive, but you can get kind of tailored, customized type of solutions, whereas the outsourcing, if you are outsourcing to the right provider, does provide you the opportunity to leverage the systems and investment that a larger provider has been able to make, but there might be some instances that you don't get the full functionality that you want to be able to have. Either way, clients are realizing that the most important thing that they have to do is improve that flow of data, be able to see their positions faster, quicker, more robustly, and across the positions as a firm, because each piece of that collateral that's sitting out there just is increased in value given everything that's happening in the markets today. In addition, we are also seeing a lot of and hearing a lot of questions around collateral transformation. There's an understanding that even if the clients are able to pinpoint and see what they have across their firms, that their strategies are just going to lead them to be in a position that they're just not going to have certain type of collateral that is going to be the necessary forms to either pass for their unclear trades or their clear trades. You know, a lot of firms don't want to sit there with humongous stockpiles of cash and liquid treasuries. It just goes against kind of what they're doing as they're trying to chase return. We're also seeing conversations and realizing that there's a value for partnering with custodians and outsourcing providers that also have arms that can talk to you and engage with the client in an ability to take some of the collateral they want to stay and to engage in what is the most classic collateral upgrade trade to be able to move it into types of cash or securities that can be used to pledge on to the counterparties, whether that counterparty is an uncleared counterparty that's regulated under Dodd-Frank or another regulation, or that counterparty ultimately is a central clearinghouse.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Jason. On the topic of collateral optimization, do any of the speakers want to add any comments on that?
I'm happy to corroborate what Jason has said there. I mean, certainly from my point of view, I wouldn't underestimate the complexity of the algorithms you can build for optimization, but the initial challenge is data integration, and that's what stopped most firms getting to a point of being able to optimize collateral, is that inability to get a firm-wide view across the inventory. So that's what I think most firms have been working on to do. Once you've done that, then you I think you can to try and understand what kind of complexity of rules, et cetera, you can build on top of that to actually optimize your collateral. I think you can look to the types of things that the tri-party agents do, to what you see in the securities lending world where you get fairly complex rules building in asset liquidity, valuation, settlement dates, upcoming corporate actions, haircuts, all this sort of stuff, depending upon individual client preferences, really trying to enable them to squeeze as much financing capability out of the collateral and optimize across the whole inventory book. So I think once you get to that position with the single inventory view, then there's a lot that you can do with it, and a lot of firms, particularly in the equity world, have made a lot of money out of that historically by really squeezing the best use out of collateral. But till you've got that view, virtually impossible to do.
Yeah, I'd kind of echo that. I mean, I think within the tri-party world, as Nick said, it's fairly established the services around optimization and the algorithms that are available to optimize the collateral pool. Big challenge is when you start to look more broadly at the global collateral pool across all of the business lines, tri-party arrangements, bilateral arrangements, central cleared arrangements, across the OTC derivatives, securities lending, repo, prime, whatever the business line might be, the gathering of all of those requirements across those different business lines, across the different geographical regions, and matching those requirements to the total available collateral pool is a challenge, but one that will reap quite significant rewards if you're able to get the information, be able to process the algorithms that you need. Obviously, when you're looking globally, you need to understand, you need to get real-time views of your collateral position, settlements and fails. You need to know about the availability. You need to know about costs of transaction, custody costs, settlement timings, concentration limits, compliance rules, and so on. So there's a whole raft of different parameters to take into account when you're trying to optimize.
Okay,
But a real realization, I think, with the squeeze on liquidity since the crisis and the additional collateral requirements that are coming in with the regulation, the fact that everyone's going to have to post more collateral under these new rules means that trying to optimize your collateral is becoming ever more important, and it's something that a lot of our clients are starting to or are struggling with and are starting to address now.
Okay, unless there's anything else on collateral optimization, I'd like to move on to collateral trading. Now, these two functions are very closely linked, so this is really a continuation of the optimization discussion. But I'd like to ask the panel how an enterprise-wide approach to collateral management can support collateral trading activities and other types of strategies that more firms are moving towards in terms of using collateral as a revenue-generating activity. So, Ewan, would you like to start us off with your take on this?
Yeah, I can, and I think you're right in the correlation between optimization and collateral trading is very close, at least in terms of the base requirement to have your positional and exposure data correct. So it's a key requirement, clearly, before you're going to trade or transact off collateral balances, that you understand where those balances are, that they're validly settled, that they're not segregated in any way. Obviously, we've seen a growth in segregated initial margin balances through some of the asset managers, that we understand kind of the nature and the availability of collateral for reuse. Also that we kind of have a very clear view around the legal documentation supporting our ability to cross net exposures, which is in turn freeing up available collateral. The documents themselves that overarch various underlying collateral agreements kind of have to be worked through, but equally the collateral criteria that those documents dictate needs to be fed down into internal systems so that the right view is presented. And then I guess the other key points are the ability to kind of forecast, as one of the other participants mentioned, to forecast your collateral positions, to understand where your balances will be in the future, where they'll be under stress or improved conditions, in effect model your collateral balances effectively so you can kind of preempt changes to the makeup of your collateral mix across the portfolio. Because clearly the ability to understand that and do it within the right margins is the key to being able to generate revenue from the collateral pool or the various collateral pools.
Yeah, I would touch on, that's a good point about that whole forecasting piece about forecasting the potential need for collateral in the future. Obviously, it's fairly complex because then you're into a derivatives modeling because you're modeling the derivatives exposures. So you get in into, without wanting to get off topic, into the what a lot of people now call the funding valuation adjustment, which is the opposite side of the credit valuation adjustment, but it gets into that whole derivatives modeling piece to actually do that properly too.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that is that's natural evolution of the way people are looking at CVA these days. We're now looking at taking into account using similar techniques, as Nick said, to model the expected collateral balance over the life of a trade, and thus what the funding costs of that collateral would be, and to factor that into the pre-deal pricing. It also has an impact, or can have an impact on where you might place a particular trade when you are looking either bilaterally or centrally cleared arrangements. Being able to understand the relative impact of a a particular trade on the collateral that you'd be required to post. It can have, or it can be important, can help you make a decision about what particular CCP you might use or what particular counterparty you might trade with that would give you the most beneficial impact on your collateral. So I think firms are certainly starting to take this into account a lot more as part of their pre-deal decision-making processes.
Excellent. Okay. Moving on to the next question. This is a big motivator that all of you have addressed already, but just to go into a little bit more detail on credit counterparty risk. How does a cross-silo approach to collateral management improve a firm's ability to manage credit counterparty risk? As this is obviously very important post-credit crisis. Jason, do you want to start us off with your opinion on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And matter of fact, I mean, the two questions, the one prior for the collateral trading around how the enterprise approach helps is going to be very similar here in this stage, right? I mean, it is going to be the same elements that Ewan and Nick pointed out. You know, it's going to be the documentation, the ability to forecast, the ability to monitor. The difference here is rather than when you're looking at the counterparty exposure, that's what you're looking at is to see your exposure to your counterparty rather than maybe necessarily, you know, the optimized trade in essence. I mean, if you flip this question on its head, it's very clear that if you're not having a cross-silo approach, that a siloed approach creates issues around finding out what the true exposure to any counterparty is at any given day. If you have areas that are making their own decisions with their own systems and with uniqueness around the legal documentation and process, not only do you now lose the transparency that you have from a firm-wide approach, but you're also never going to be certain that in a case of crisis that you have the appropriate netting procedures, that you are covered legally, that the documentation and the positions that you think are netted without having that enterprise-wide management solution. And that is why, as I said, we are seeing a tremendous uptick in the number of clients who are starting to invest in the systems and the technology to start to view things cross silos, mostly as a risk mitigation tool first and foremost.
Okay, so that's the main driver you're really seeing, Jason, that?
From our clients, from most of our client bases, it tends to be, especially in areas of corporates and folks that have lived through the financial crisis of 2 years ago. Many of them found out that their processes, a significant amount of people still tried to do this themselves. And when they started to strain during the stress time of 2 years ago, they realized the need to, you know, that areas, these areas that I highlighted, where they thought they might have had netted agreements or they thought they might have had a handle around their exposure, they didn't have the information that they thought they needed, or at least they weren't able to get it as quickly as possible when faced with a true crisis and saw how quickly a crisis can move. And I think that way the cross-siloed approach has become much more important and much more top of mind for many of the clients that we've interacted with on the buy side.
Great. Nick or Ewan, do you have any comments on what the sell side thinks about this? I mean, is this a major driver for enterprise-wide strategies, or is it just one of many for sell-side institutions?
Jump in with a couple of points, and they're probably in almost on the less sophisticated side of the whole enterprise view, which is the kind of STP model, the very basic, am I getting information about the counterparty who consistently fails to me, or the guy who has significant fails or non-payment against a derivative transaction. You know, I'm going to release collateral to someone on the basis of assumed settlement or on the basis of a, you know, cash flow that was due yesterday that actually hasn't arrived. So there are some fundamental building blocks that can be built in to feed up from equity finance systems, repo systems, or, you know, classic OTC that give us some very basic building block views that can then be leveraged to kind of give the risk warning. Is there a constant failure on margin incoming? You know, is collateral returned, not done in a timely, not agreed, disputed? So some of that kind of basic MIS that generally has been rolled day on day, ways to capture that are useful and model kind of counterparty behavior, which can be leveraged then to provide a kind of early warning around individuals. And also on the relatively basic and kind of fundamental side is having all the data into a single system allows for easy assessment where, you know, we're looking at what exposure in Ireland may be or exposure in Portugal, both from a counterparty domicile or a collateral origination basis. So these types of things can generally in the silos be addressed quite easily, but bringing everything together allows for a much more seamless and quick, my exposures across Portugal are X, you know, counterparty Y has failed, you know, consistently over the last 3 or 4 days. Is this someone we need to start, you know, viewing with more closely, if you like?
Excellent. On credit counterparty risk, are there any comments, Ted or Nick, do you want to add anything on what you've seen for clients or buy-side or sell-side, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly it's more of the same, really. Certainly there's the qualitative risk management operational control process, which the more you standardize, the more you harmonize, then you get a fundamental improvement to that process. So I think what we've heard from a lot of these the sessions on this call is the need for that timely integrated reporting to be able to make informed management decisions around the counterparty process, but also to support things like the CVA counterparty active credit risk management process at that level as well. And then in addition to that whole qualitative view and qualitative decision-making process around the credit risk, which it supports, then just the whole standardization, extra granularity and accuracy and timeliness of data feeding into the risk processes then provides a key support to the quantitative credit risk calculation processes at both the internal calculations and the capital calculations as well. So it's if you look at across the board out of the financial crisis, a lot of the issues were to do with lack of granularity of data, lack of understanding around data. This and which had the knock-on effect on credit risk processes. This is part of that building out that robustness to provide both a quantitative and a qualitative risk management framework, which is going to be sound and robust.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's a good note to end on. Just to focus next on operational challenges and benefits, which you've already touched on again as a collective panel. My question to the panel next is what are the operational challenges and benefits to be gained by implementing an enterprise-wide collateral management strategy? And specifically, how are firms managing the data question in terms of what you guys have already mentioned, gathering data from different areas of the business to get that consolidated view? And Ted, as our technology expert, can you give us your take on this?
Clearly the aggregation of the data is a huge challenge for institutions attempting to bring together their various disparate collateral operations into a single area. Getting the data into a consistent format, having consistent views of the counterparties of the accounts, of understanding differences in market data requirements across regions and across business lines, and understanding the constraints around timings of data, of settlements, and so forth is a big challenge. Also, clearly different business lines have different operational practices. In OTC, the bilateral OTC world, you'll typically be making end of day, once a day collateral calls across your portfolio. In businesses like the securities lending, you might be making end of day calls, and you might also be making intraday calls as well. And you'll be able to get an intraday view of exposures in certain business lines, but not in others, where the actual processes of working out your total exposure are take longer to run. So, you know, these are all issues that that organizations are struggling with. Clearly, you know, we talked about the optimization of collateral and the need to do that, or the benefits from doing that, to be able to optimize your collateral positions or your collateral requirements effectively. You do need that that global inventory available, and you do need to have its status updated in real time as much as possible. And then,
Sorry, Ted. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, from a from the risk management perspective as well, just looking at the global risk view, if you want to start using simulation type techniques to understand what the total exposures and impact of or potential future collateral requirements will be. There is your total data requirements are obviously much greater than they are just to understand what today's current exposure is and collateralize that. So getting that data together and normalized is a key challenge.
I was just going to ask, there's a question from the audience about asking about how important entity identification will become and how soon will a system in the industry be adopted. I know it's early days for this, but do any of the speakers have any comments on entity identification and how this is evolving and how it plays a role in collateral management strategies going forward? I'll take that as a no. So perhaps that's too technical of a question. I know very little about this topic myself, but I know that it's very early days for this. So perhaps in 6 months' time or something, this will be evolved as an initiative more so.
Yeah, I think the silence is more that it's not recognized as a problem, a sort of inter-organizational sort of data issues and problems which arise from it. The question: how soon will a system be available to support to resolve the problem? I think nobody knows the answer to. So, hence the silence.
Well, we've got plenty of other things to talk about. So, unless anyone has any comments on operational challenges, I'll move on.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say to close or to add a little bit on operational challenges, I mean, ultimately what we're seeing is that, you know, clients are looking to just reduce the number of interfaces that they have, you know, and they're trying to, as they deal with the various interfaces, they're trying to standardize as much as possible the rules under which those interfaces or you interact with amongst those interfaces, whether that's done from managing your counterparties or managing your flow, or that's done through the use of an intermediary. But ultimately, to get that kind of standardization is where you get the operational efficiencies that are going to help you with your goals of mitigating your risk, improving the efficiency through reduced staff needs, and then ultimately enhancing your returns by making sure you can optimize the collateral positions.
Yeah, and I would add there's clearly economies of scale to be gained from centralizing processes. And obviously, along the various different business lines, you've got very similar processes happening kind of independently of each other. The processes of working out the collateral requirements, of issuing calls, of responding to calls, of disputing, of reconciliation, and so on. These are all common processes that have historically tended to happen in parallel, independently. And to be able to bring those together on a standardized platform using the same group of people is obviously going to have benefits for you in terms of improving standards, improving operational standards, or having consistent operational standards and the economies of scale that you would get from that kind of industrial-sized process.
Mm. Yeah, I think those... I think one thing, all those benefits are really, really clear, and I think maybe I'd just be the contrarian for a minute and sing the song for those people who've worked in silos for many years. I think one of the reasons organizations find it a challenge to move away from the silo approach is because when organizations set up projects to actually create the enterprise view and try to standardize across the silos, they don't necessarily appreciate or try to understand or recognize the complexities and nuances in each of the silos, which causes a blockage, lack of understanding, and it actually prevents the move to any form of enterprise-wide view. So I think it's quite important to actually recognize that there are some complexities and nuances in each silo, and then there's a decision about what to do about those, whether those are worth standardizing or certain of the specific functions get left in the silo approach, and I think it's key to understand what your drivers are for actually standardizing to an enterprise-wide view, and which of those operational silo product line processes that implies that you need to then standardize. So just because I think there may be a lot of people on the line who actually do work in a silo today and saying, well, hey, hang on, what I do is very different. Say they work in sec lending, very different to an OTC guy. So that I think there are complexities which need to be understood as you go through a consolidation process.
Yes, and finding the resources and the people who can work in that kind of across those silos and understand those complexities is always a big challenge, right? Those are very unique kind of individuals who can think more broadly and then try to translate all the needs that you might have articulated there into some sort of technology solution that's going to fit a very broad audience.
I would kind of maybe only add that there is an external challenge as well in terms of understanding what your counterparty mix is across the various different product types, where there's correlation, where there's standalone, are clients ready to accept single calls, do they understand the process behind that, more classically through the, you know, stock lending being a good example is usually an outlier from the classic netting, the netting sets that we may use repo against OTC or futures against OTCs already. Just having a clear view around who those people are and how the approach will be undertaken to discuss a single call process, or if that's not appropriate, how individual calls will be bundled. That can be a challenge in itself.
Now, we're already touching on the next area, so I just want to formally move there on cultural and organizational challenges. And obviously, this is a big part of the implementation of an enterprise-wide strategy because of the silo culture. So you guys have already touched on this. Is there anything else in terms of more general cultural or organizational obstacles that firms will face in moving to a firm-wide approach? And what is your take on how firms should look to address these challenges?
Yeah, I think, I mean, first what they'll have to do is get the teams, the appropriate teams involved, right? A lot of times when folks are in silos, there's not a lot of forums or not a lot of opportunities to people to discuss their challenges. So kind of having maybe a group of folks specifically tasked to do this who can then make the appropriate discussions, you know, and decide whether or not the firm has the right resources to handle this internally or if they're going to have to look to have a partner will be very, very important, particularly in cases where we see, you know, these are big undertakings, right? Everything that we brought out here is creates build and creates expense. Getting that budget, you know, having the people who can then manage the funds, then on top of doing this, you know, the advantages of having, and the reason these things did grow out the way they did is because people could focus and they can do things that work very, very well and be very nimble and articulate a need to spend in a certain area and then drive those projects through. It almost takes a rethink about how you're going to manage product and how you're going to deliver technology for your organization and what requirements that has from a staffing and how you assign the people to do this. Really takes a new approach, a new way. You got to really think very differently than maybe you have in the past.
Okay. The next question is about competitiveness. Now, this is just a blanket question asking what the competitive advantages are for financial institutions adopting a firm-wide collateral management operation successfully. So just quickly, Ted, do you want to start us off with any points or thoughts on the competitive advantages that you see for your clients?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we've touched on a lot of them already, but you know, more generally, what we've seen is a move of, I guess, the role of collateral management from its more historic base as a its main function just being for mitigation of counterparty credit risk, and much more towards it being a profit enabler in terms of the two aspects of it, with the additional transactions that, that it enables you to do, and then the opportunity for the reuse of the of those collateral assets that that you have. So, you know, a move in that direction. The other aspects are around the enhanced customer service that we talked about earlier on, just in improving the various scopes or the scope of the different services given to your clients, such as the collateral transformation processes. And then, you know, what else for competitiveness? Well, collateral optimization, the operational efficiencies that we've talked about, and yeah, then the risk management and stress testing aspect, and the ability to perform pre-deal calculations and take into account the cost of collateral in the deal pricing.
So basically, in summary, everything that we've discussed, in credit risk, the collateral optimization capabilities, they all really give financial institutions a competitive edge in the near term and long term, you know, in kind of that all-encompassing way. I would like to move on to the Q&A just because we've got just a couple minutes to take a couple questions. The first question I'd like to ask the panel is about real-time changes in prices and valuations. So the question from the participant is, how is the industry handling real-time changes in pricing, and valuations? We touched on this very briefly, and I believe, Nick, you touched on this. So do you have any comments on how your clients or you see the industry adapting this real-time kind of era and how that links with collateral management?
So I think from a purely collateral management perspective, I mean, I think the I certainly don't see, particularly on those OTC type agreements where it is a daily process, and the people looking to do an intraday call, but other people may have different views from that. But certainly, real time prices can enable more complex what-if sort of scenario modeling and preparation and forecasting, which I think is absolutely key. So certainly I think getting real-time updates, information to enable that, to get real-time views into the world and to be able to model the world in real time is important. And certainly on the equity side of the world, on securities lending, I mean, whilst again, it's generally an end-of-day process from a collateral perspective, I mean, they do, they have, most organizations have historically had the ability to reload in the equities prices and revalue the collateral and process that intraday. So I think there's certainly from an information and a modeling perspective and what if sort of scenario kind of perspective, I think there's it's certainly a good deal of value for that. But I haven't necessarily seen a lot of intraday collateral calls, if you like, but maybe some of the collateral managers themselves, maybe you and maybe have a different view on that.
Yeah, no, I would kind of concur in that a highly useful tool and a real time monitor, if you like, is something that can add tremendous value. However, in terms of agreeing a call and agreeing exposures between two parties, clearly a time has to be agreed and portfolios have to be marked, a line in the sand drawn, if you like, at which point the exposure is deemed. Otherwise, it's a consistently moving target. So I think in the purely practical, how do we agree on the exposure number, real-time kind of doesn't drop into that necessarily. Most agreements will define a, you know, close a business, X market, product line Y. And I can't see us necessarily moving away from that, particularly in OTC. Clearly, around the exchanges, they have much more robust and virtually live. Transactions are coming on and off all the time. The live pricing of exposure to exchange and to clients through exchange exposure is a very different matter and something that will, you know, develop over time. That you need to understand almost to the minute what your client's exposure is via a clearing arrangement.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the benefits of real time really comes in when you're looking at the what if scenario about what would happen if you had a new piece of collateral or if you put on a new trade. Being able to do things like replicate initial margin calculations at an exchange. So if the exchange is using VAR, for example, to calculate the initial margin, having the tools to be able to run either an incremental VAR or a whole new simulation to be able to see the impact of a new trade will certainly be a competitive advantage there.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you for answering that question. I'm just looking through the questions here, and it looks like we've answered a lot of them throughout the discussion. So if you have arrived late in the call, please do listen to the recording when we send it out tomorrow and review that, and hopefully that'll answer any other questions that you've posed to us today. But without further ado, thank you very much for those of you who have attended today, and thank you to our speakers, Ted Ewan and Nick Jason, who have kindly shared their expertise with us. Thank you also to our sponsor, SunGard, and again to our very captive audience today. We welcome your feedback, and we've included a very short multiple choice survey at the end of this event. So if you would like to provide us with feedback or any comments on the event today or in the future, please do participate, and that shouldn't take more than 30 seconds. And that's pretty much it for today. So thank you very much. We hope you found the discussion informative and useful, and we hope you will join us again in the future. Thanks very much. Goodbye.